We are holding on page Samach Gimel, beginning Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Masechta Rosh Hashanah starts by talking about the Arba Rosh Hashanim, and the first one it mentions that Rosh Chodesh Nissan is Rosh Hashanah L'Molochim V'L'Regolim. So the Gemara discusses that L'Molochim means for Jewish kings, the years of Jewish kings, no matter when he became king, his year is considered to begin in Nisan. And it actually points out there's a necessity for that. If you just went according to when the king actually assumed the throne, then the problem is people might lose track of it. And then you're going to have, the Gemara points out, you have a problem with documents that are going to be predated and postdated, and there's going to be all kinds of confusion. So they have to set up a standard date when the years will begin from, because they would date documents according to the king's years, and they made it Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So the Gemara deals with how. So the Gemara starts by dealing with how do we know that that's the case? How do we know that their years begin with Nissan? And so the Gemara explains first. The Gemara explains before we get to the part over here about before we get to the part over here in Ein Yaakov. The Gemara explains that we have a pasuk that says that Shlomo HaMelech's years, that his regnal years, his years, the years of his reign, are counted from the same time as Yetzias Mitzrayim. And since years of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Pashtos, are counted from Nisan, then so are the years of Jewish kings. But then that leads the Gemara into how do we know? Maybe in fact years of Yetzias Mitzrayim in fact should be counted from Tishrei. After all, we have Rosh Hashanah is in Tishrei. Maybe we would say that if the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim would be year one, and it lasted 6 months because it started from Nisan and ended with Elul, and then year two begins already in Tishrei. And so the Gemara explains you can't say that because we know that Moshe at the beginning of Chumash Devarim starts giving his speech, which constitutes Chumash Devarim in Shvat of the 40th year. Meanwhile, the pasuk says, and the pasuk says that was after Moshe had killed Sichon and Og, after Moshe had defeated and killed Sichon and Og. Now, on the other hand, we find that Aaron passed away in Chodesh Av, also of the 40th year. And as the Gemara is going to point out now, when Aaron passed away, Sichon was still alive. The wars with Sichon and Og took place only later on. So therefore, of necessity, it has to be. If the years of Yetzias Mitzrayim began in Tishrei, then that's between Av and Shvat. Therefore, by the time Moshe starts speaking in Shvat, it would already be well into the 41st year. And the fact that the Pasuk still calls it the 40th year means that the year can't begin between those months. So at this point, the Gemara assumes it must be Nisan. Later on, a part that's again in the Gemara, not here in Ein Yaakov, it starts dealing with how we know it's not some other month. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Ki noch nafshe de Aaron. When Aaron passed away, Akati have a Sichon Kayim, Sichon was still alive. Dichtiv, as we find in the Psukim, after Aaron passes away, Vayishma Knani Melech. Now, Marsha points out the Gemara has to prove from the Gemara has to prove from the actual content of the Psukim. It's not just enough to say that in order you have it, that you have the order of the Psukim in Parshas Chukas. Is first Aaron passes away, and then they later on in Parshas Chukas, then they tangle with Sichon, because you could always say in Muktum of Ocha Batar. So therefore, we have to be able to show it from within the psukim, from within the content of the psukim themselves. So the pasuk says, "Vayishma Knani Melech Arod." The Knani, the king of Arod, heard, and he came to attack the Jewish people. Now, as the Gemara is going to point out in a little bit, the Gemara over here is understanding that this Melech Arod is none other than Sichon. Now, that's not universally agreed to, by the way. Tosfos brings from a medrash that in fact it was Amalek. Rashi brings it on the pasuk as well that the Amalekim dressed themselves up as Knanim and came to attack the Jewish people, figuring that then the Jews are going to see Knanim attacking them and they're going to think they're going to dive into Hashem, help us against the Knanim, and meanwhile it's Amalekim and therefore they'll get away with it. Meanwhile, the Jewish people just say over there in Parshas Chukas, "Im nosin titin asa oma zebiyodi," without specifying the name of the nation, and they were able to defeat them. However, though, the point is, Tosfos says, even if we go with that medrash that it was actually Amalekim, but what they're disguising themselves as Knanim, as subjects of Sichon, wouldn't make sense to do that unless Sichon is still alive and ruling over his territory. Otherwise, everybody knows he's been defeated already. So therefore, it still works with what we're saying over here in the Gemara. By the way, there are other examples in history as well where it says where the Amalekim disguised themselves as another nation and came to attack. There's a pasuk in Divrei Yamim. It tells about a battle in the times of Yehoshaphat, which Kapitel Pei Gimel of Tilim refers to that battle and all the coalition of nations that came to attack the Jewish people. And it meant in the Psukim, in Divrei Yomim, over there, it mentions that the Moavim and Ammonim, and with them some of the Ammonim came. So what do you mean? If the Ammonim are coming, who's the son of the Ammonim? Rashi brings over there also from Medrash that it was again the Amalekim, this time disguising themselves as Ammonim. So they had a habit of doing this kind of thing. Anyway, so Mashmua Shoma, when the Pasuk is saying that the Knani Melech Arad heard, what did he hear? Now, in the Psukim you have, it says, Ki bo Yisrael derech ha'asorim, that the Jewish people are coming by the way of the Asorim. But that still doesn't really explain, and Rashi explains over there, it means that they're following in the footsteps of the Meraglim, and they're following in the footsteps of the Oren, but still, the fact is, Marsha points out that brings from the Ramban and Chumash, that this story is repeated in Parashas Maaseh, and there it doesn't say what he heard. It just says Vayishma Knani Melech Arad Bevoi Bnei Yisrael, without saying anything about Derech HaAsarim. So therefore, the Gemara wants to find out what exactly was bothering this Knani Melech Arad that he came to attack. And Marusha also adds the fact is the Gemara is also understanding that it's because of the Smichos. Since it talks about Misas Aaron in Parashas Chukas and also in Parashas Maaseh, and in both places right after that you have the Knani Melech Arad, then we understand that there's a connection between those two things. So Mashmua Shoma Shemes Aaron, he heard that Aaron had passed away, the Nistalko Anani Kovod, and that the Anani Kovod had gone away, because the Anani Kovod were there in the Schus of Aaron. We know they had the three things they had in the Midbar, the well in the Schus of Miriam, the clouds, the Anani Kovod in the Schus of Aaron, and the Mon in the Schus of Moshe. So now the Anani Kovod went away. So he thought thereby Hashem is giving him permission and authority to attack the Jewish people, and therefore he came and attacked. They make this mistake all the time. It's true, yeah. Behind Udichtiv, and this is also what the Pasuk means when it says after Aaron passed away, by Yudu Kola Eda ki Gova Aaron, the whole congregation saw that Aaron had passed away. Now, the problem with that, now that would be the simple meaning of the Pasuk. The problem with that is that Marsha says, what do you mean they saw that Aaron had passed away? By Yomas Shom Aaron Beroi Shahar. They didn't all see it. Rashi mentions over there on the Pasuk, there was a cave and Aaron went into it and then lay down over there, etc. So they couldn't possibly have actually seen Kigova Aaron. The most you have, Rashi mentions over there that they were shown him in a mitzvah by the Malachi Asharis, but still the Gemara over here wants to see a different meaning in it. So, V'omra Babohu Al Tikru Vayiru Elo Vayero. Not Vayiru, they saw, but Vayeru, and they were seen. Because the Anani HaKavod disappeared, so now they're able to be seen by everybody around them. And now how does that fit with the Pasuk Ki Gova Aaron, Kid Rish Lakish? The reason is because, like what Rish Lakish says, the Amr Rish Lakish, Ki Meshamish Ba'ar B'Lashonis, the word Ki in Tanakh can be used in any of four different meanings. E, which means if, Dilma, perhaps, Ella, however, and Daha, because. So in other words, and Rashi and Tosfos go into an Arichos over here about the details of all of that. Rashi brings examples of each one of them, and Rashi points out some of them have sub-meanings as well. For example, sometimes it means that. Like over here, the simple meaning of the Pasuk would be, they saw that Aaron had passed away. So Rashi explains that these kinds of things are a sub meaning of E, which means if. He doesn't explain it over here, but he explains. He explains over here that it means that it means beloshen asher, meaning that, then it's a sub meaning of E if. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, and in fact, Rashi himself in Gittin, where this Gemara is also brought, says that rather those are a sub-meaning of the word daha, which means because. They saw that, such and such, is a sub-meaning of they saw because, and similarly with other kinds of keys. And you have all kinds. The word key has many different meanings like that, and Rashi brings examples of all of them. Many times it means that or because, but sometimes it does mean if, like, sometimes it means perhaps, Rashi points out. For example, let's say you have keys, Rashi points it out on Chumash as well. When it says, for example, that these nations are too mighty for me, what am I going to do? Don't be afraid of them. Rashi points out over there, it can't mean if. Because what would that mean? If you say that, then don't be afraid of them. And if you don't say that, then what, you should be afraid of them? No, it means Dilma, perhaps it might happen that you might say such and such. In that case, don't say that because you shouldn't be afraid of them. And we have other examples like that as well. The point that we're getting at with the statement of Rish Lakish is Now, the word ki can mean that or because. Or it can mean because. Daha means because. Vayero'u, we're dashing vayero as vayero'u. Kol ha'eda, the entire congregation was seen. Why? Daha, because ki, meis Aaron, because Aaron had passed away. So we see that because Aaron passed away, now they're exposed and the Anani HaKavod have disappeared. And now the next thing is that now the Kenani Melech Harod came to attack them. However, so we see that Sichon was still alive. However, the Gemara asked me, "Dummy, how are you comparing it? Hosim Knan, Hocha Sichon." There it says Haknani Melech Harod, and here we're trying to figure out that Sichon was still alive when Aaron passed away. So, what does one have to do with the other? And the answer is Tonim. We learn in a Brisa, Hu Sichon, Hu Arod, Hu Knan. They're all three names for the same person. Now, on a Toshet Pshat, Tosfos points out the name Arod is the name of the capital city or the name of the country. But the Gemara is darshaning over here that Haknani Melech Arod would actually mean the king named Arod, who was the king of the Knani. Marsha points out the Sichon himself is not a Knani. Sichon himself, we know there's a medrash that says. You have the two malachim, Shem Chazoy and Azoril, who came down to earth in the years before the Mabul, because they said to Hashem, what do you need humanity for? They're busy doing Averis anyhow. And Hashem says, look, they have a Yetzahara, what do you want from them? And they say, we'll go down there and we'll act better. We learned about this in Yuma. And then in the end, they went down and they ended up acting even worse than the human beings. Anyway, from them came, one of them was Mizana with a woman. I think it says that it was actually Chom's wife. And Sichon was born from that. So Sichon himself is not a Knani, but he's ruling over a nation of Knani. So a Knani Melech Arod, then Marsha says it would mean what the Gemara is saying over here. It means that his name is Arod, or one of his names is Arod, and he's ruling over his kingdom is a kingdom of Knani. Marsha also points out the reason why the Gemara does that. Why doesn't the Gemara just say, like Tosfos is saying, that Arod is partially the name of the city where he ruled from? Marsha says because we find Arod as listed among one of the cities of Eretz Yisrael that Yeshua later conquered and defeated and killed their king. So what do you mean that now they attacked the Jewish people in the Midbar and the Jewish people destroyed them? Then what's left for Yeshua to do? Therefore, the Gemara is understanding that Arod is actually a nickname for Sichon. So the Poshet Pshat would be that it was a city. So either there were two cities named Arod, or this time the Jewish people destroyed it, and then the Canaan rebuilt it, and then the Jews destroyed it again. But here the Gemara is not accepting that. So Tono, who Sichon, who Arod, who Canaan, it's all three names for the same person. He's called Sichon Shedoma L'Syoch Bamidbar because he's like a wild. Not wild. He's like a pony, like a young horse in the desert, very wild and very free to running around wherever he wants. Knan Hashem Machose. He's called Knan because he ruled over a nation of Knanim. Umashmoy Arod Shmoy, and his real name is Arod. His real name is Arod. Ikadamri, or others say another way you could look at it, Arod Shadomala Aroid Bamidbar, that Arod could also be a nickname for him because he's like an Aroid, like a wild donkey in the desert, again, like a free spirit. Knan Al Shem Machose, and Knan would be the name of his kingdom, or Mashmoy Sichon, Shmoy, and according to that, his real name was Sichon. So everybody agrees that Knan is a nickname, but the question is which one was his real name, Sichon or Arod. But we're understanding that all of them are names for the same person. The bottom line being, in other words, that again, since the Knani Melech Arod, who we're understanding to be Sichon, or as Tosfos says, maybe people who are disguising themselves as Sichon and his army, whatever. And the fact that they're attacking after Aaron passed away, means that Sichon is still alive at the time, and therefore later on, when Moshe starts speaking Chumash Devarim, and that was Achrei Akoseh Sichon, then necessarily that has to be that he started speaking after Aaron had passed away, and therefore, and since both events are dated in the 40th year, then we understand that it means that the years of Yetzias Mitzrayim begin before, of, and after Shvat, which the Gemara ends up saying means Nissan. Okay, then the Gemara starts dealing with the point that the Malchei Umas Ha'olam, that Goyish kings, on the other hand, their years are counted from Tishrei. Again, how the Goyish governments themselves do is not our concern. We're talking about in terms of dating our documents and psukim, as the Gemara is going to quote now, according to their years, we figure from Tishrei. And it actually mentions, by the way, on the Mishnah, that there's a Mishnah in Gittin that says that they would date Gittin and other documents like that by the years of the Goyish kings, Mishum Shloy Malchus. It helps preserve peaceful relations with the Goyish governments under which we live, that they see, look how important the Jews consider us, that they date their religious documents, their Gittin, using our years. In later times, the post can point out the Goyim are not machbet on that kind of thing as well. They don't consider it a particular honor to do that, and therefore we don't do it anymore. We just date Gittin according to the years since creation. Anyway, so for our purposes, the Gemara says we count the years of Goyish kings from Tishrei. And in this connection, the Gemara brings two parts of a story involving Nehemiah from which we see. Now, you have two parts that the Gemara is going to quote over here, the first two prakim of Nehemiah. The first one is dated in Kislev of the 20th year, and the second one is dated in Nisan of that same year. So since then, the Gemara is going to establish that the events of Kislev in Perek Aleph necessarily happened before the events of Nisan in Perek Beis, and they're both described as the 20th year, and the Gemara points out there's even a Gzeira Shava that we can say that when it says 20th year by both of them, it means the 20th year of the king. Then, therefore, it means of King Artaxasta. Then it means if Kislev comes before Nisan, it means the new year can't begin in Nisan; it must begin in Tishrei. Tosfos actually points out a couple of things in that regard. First of all, Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that maybe not necessarily. Maybe even Goyish kings' years do begin in Nisan. However, the Yerushalmi says until you have 30 days into the new year, you can't really say that the year has rolled over yet. So therefore, you could still call Nisan the part of the 20th year, meaning that even though officially the 21st year has begun, you wouldn't actually start writing year 21 until 30 days into the year, until year, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi. Second of all, though, Tosfos also deals with the question, when we say the 20th year of King Artaxasta, what are we talking about? So for this, we have to give a little background about the Seder Hazmanim of that period in Jewish history. Bekitzer, we have like this. The Kurdish and Daryovish came. They were the rulers of Paras and Modai. They overthrew the Empire of Babel. You had the whole thing with Belshazzar's party and the writing on the wall. And Babylonia, as the Pasuk says, that night Belshazzar was killed. And then Kurdish and Daryovish took over. Daryovish Hamodi, because he's from Modai, ruled for about a year. Then he was old, and then he died. Then Kurdish, who was his son-in-law, took over and ruled for a couple of years. Then you have, after that, comes Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus of the Megillah, and he ruled for 14 years. Whether he was a son of Kurdish or nobody who became king, there's different opinions about that. When we get to Masechta Megillah, we'll talk about it, Bez Hashem. But anyway. The Kitzer. So then you said you have Ahasuerus. Then you have the second Daryovish, who was the son of Ahasuerus and Esther, and he ruled for 30 odd years. The last date that the Pasuk mentions of him is his 32nd year as a Pasuk in Nehemiah. Altogether, the Persian Empire lasted 52 years from when they overthrew Babel until, in turn, Alexander the Great came and conquered them and then ended their kingdom. Goyish histories, by the way, have a lot more years for the Persians, and they have a lot more kings than that, and there's been an enormous amount of ink spilled about how to reconcile those. But this is why, for example, you'll often find in books, for example, you'll find in a lot of books, even in some Jewish history books, you'll find, for example, let's say they'll talk about Churban Bayis tradition being in 586 BCE, whereas according to our calculations, that it was in the year Gimel Alafim Shin Lamed Ches 3338 since creation, then it comes out to 422 BCE. So you have a discrepancy of around 160, 170 years. And like I said, a lot of ink has been spilled all the way back to the Sadia Goin, dealing with how we reconcile those. Anyway, Eich Shigia, from our sources, we have these four kings of Paras and Madai, and they last for a total of 52 years. So now Tosfos points out like this. One way of talking about the question is like this. The psukim, as we're going to learn them now, are describing that Nehemiah is informed that the Jewish people in Yerushalayim, that the Jews in Yerushalayim who have come back to build the second Beis Hamikdash, are in a really bad situation. Now, the psukim in Sefer Ezra describe how so they started when Koresh first took over the kingship. He gave out the announcement, which you have at the end of Divrei Yomim, at the beginning of Ezra, about that everybody who wants to go and rebuild the Beis Hamikdash can do so, and 40,000 and 42,000 and some Jews leave Bavel and come to Eretz Yisrael to do that. They start building the second Beis Hamikdash. Then the local Goyim and the Kusim masser on them and claim that they're trying to rebel against the king, and the work is stopped. It remains stopped throughout the whole rest of Kurdish's reign and the entire reign of Achashverosh. This is famously we have when Achashverosh tells Esther at Chatzia Malchus that you can't ask me to build the Beis Hamikdash, and until after Dariavish took over. In Dariavish's second year, the Nevi'im start telling the Jewish people, Chagai, Schali, and Malachi start telling the Jewish people, it's time to continue rebuilding. 18 years have passed since they had laid the foundations of the Beis Hamikdash. The Nevi'im are telling them it's time to continue. They continue. To make a long story short, they get official permission from Dariavish that go ahead, they can continue. When they laid the foundations until they continued now, with Chaga and Schari and Malachi telling them, was a period of 18 years. During that 18 years, in the middle of those 18 years, is when the entire story of the Megillah happens. It starts out, the Megillah starts with Bishnas Sholosh Lamochai, with Achashverosh's third year, and it ends. The last events in it are when they establish the Yom Tov Purim shortly before Achashverosh died, and then you have, after that comes Dariavish, and in his second year, they continued the rebuilding. Now, the Psukim describe over there in Ezra that they finished the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash in the sixth year of Dariavish, who was also, as the Gemara is going to point out, Dariavish is also known as Artaxasta. B'cholam, the Farshim say, the vote is that Artaxasta is a general nickname for all the kings of Persia. The same way as all the kings of Mitzrayim are called Paroi, the same way all the kings of Persia are called Artaxasta. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos wonders, so if they finished building the Beis Hamikdash already in the sixth year of Dariavish, and here the Pesukim are going to say that in the 20th year, Nehemiah is being informed about the bad situation in Yerushalayim, then what's going on? So therefore, Tosfos first wants to say that the 20th year we're talking about means 20 years since Kodesh's original proclamation. So now if we figure it out, if he gave that proclamation and they started building the Beis Hamikdash then, they started laying the foundations of the Beis Hamikdash, and then there was 18 years break. And then they were able to continue only in the times of Dariavish II, then it would come out. Tosfos calculates 20 years since Kodesh's proclamation would come out in the third year of Dariavish II. Well, then that explains it. They're in the middle of building the second Beis Hamikdash, but they haven't even finished the Beis Hamikdash yet, let alone rebuilt the walls of Yerushalayim. And therefore, Nehemiah finds out what's going on, and he's concerned and asks King Dariavish for permission to go rebuild the walls as well. The concern is because the walls of Yerushalayim are destroyed, have been broken open, and now the Goyim are able to get into Yerushalayim whenever they want and harass the Jews over there. So he wanted to build the walls of Yerushalayim. So first Tosfos explains, so what it is according to Tosfos' first explanation, this and the building of the Beis Hamikdash are happening at the same time. They start rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash in the second year of Dariavish. In the third year of Dariavish, which is 20 years since Kodesh's original proclamation, that's why he calls it Shnas Esrim, then Nehemiah gets permission to come rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. They do that, and then it takes them another 3 years, and they also finish the Beis Hamikdash. That's Tosfos' first explanation. Then Tosfos says maybe not necessarily. Maybe, in fact, it does mean the 20th year of Dariavish II. So fine, what it means is, in other words, they finished building the Beis Hamikdash, but then years have passed, they have a Beis Hamikdash, they're doing the Avodah, but they still don't have the walls of Yerushalayim rebuilt because they never got royal permission for that, and they can't do that without royal permission, and they're still in trouble because the Goyim are constantly harassing them. And then finally, when Nehemiah hears about it 14 years after the Beis Hamikdash was finished, then he asks Dariavish for permission to go and rebuild them. So two different ways... So there's two different ways. So according to the first way that Tosfos learns, it means that Beis Hamikdash was finished about 3 years after they rebuilt the walls. According to the second explanation in Tosfos Fakir, they finished the Beis Hamikdash, then another 14 years passed before they rebuilt the walls.
What do you do first? The
Kalim inside. That's interesting. Yeah, it does connect in a way with our parasha. Yeah, about building the Kalim versus the Mishkan first. Interesting point. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara brings Tanya. Dvarim she'omer Hanoni leNehemiah beKislev, the report that Hanoni, who the Gemara is now going to quote the Pesukim, that Hanoni told Nehemiah in Kislev about what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, Omra Nehemiah leMelech beNissen, Nehemiah told that very same report to the king, to King Dariavish in Nissen. What do we mean by that? Dvarim she'omer Hanoni leNehemiah beKislev, Shenemar. Sefer Nehemiah begins like this. And actually, Sefer Nehemiah, as we've talked about before, is not really a separate Sefer of Tanakh. It's really part of Sefer Ezra, but whatever. From this point on, Nehemiah wrote. Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia. These are the words of Nehemiah. Vayihi b'chodesh Kislev Shnas Esrim, in Kislev of the 20th year, which, as we said, means the 20th year of the king. And again, you have the two possibilities in Tosfos, whether we mean the 20th year since originally when Koresh became king and gave his announcement, or 20 years since Dariush II became king, two different ways of looking at it. Anyway, and Nehemiah says, I was in the capital city of Shushan. One of my brothers, it could be an actual brother, it could be a fellow Yid, whatever. He and some other people came from Yehuda, from Eretz Yisrael. And I asked them, Allah Yehudim Apleita, about what's doing with the Jews, with the fugitives, the few Jews who managed to make it, Asher Nisharu Min HaShevi, who are left over from the captivity, meaning they'd been captive in Bavel, and then they had gone to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. And Nehemiah is asking this Hanani and his colleagues, what's doing with the Jews over there? Marsha points out the reason why he mentioned Min HaShevi is based on a Gemara in Bava Basra that says, out of all the different things that might happen, the Pasuk in Yirmiyah describes the various things that are going to happen to the Jewish people at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. There's going to be ones who are dying from famine and from epidemics and from this and that, but Asher Lashvi Lashevi, the worst the Gemara says is when they're taken captive by Goyim, because then they're exposed to all the different dangers. They might be killed, they might be starved. You know, you have nowadays, you have currently with the hostages, Hashem should have Rachmanis on them, that you see, that you see what they're going through. They're exposed constantly to all the other kinds of dangers that I mentioned in the Pasuk. Therefore, when Nehemiah is asking about these Jews, he focuses on that they managed to survive the Shvi, the captivity in Babel. Anyway, so Va'al Yerushalayim, and he's asking, how is the city of Yerushalayim failing? And Vayomruli, so they told me, Hanish'orim Anshenushurim Hashevi, the leftover Jews, the ones who survived the captivity, Shom Bamedina, are there in the country in Eretz Yisrael, but Rog Dola, they're in a very bad situation. Over Cherpa, and they're in a situation where the Goyim are constantly mocking them, because they're saying, look at that, we can come into your areas, into your Shalayim, whenever we want, and take whatever we want, and do whatever we want, and ha-ha, you can't stop us because you don't have any walls around your city. And the city, the walls of Yerushalayim are breached, because ever since Nebuchadnezzar had destroyed the Yerushalayim at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, the walls had big breaches in them. And the gates of Yerushalayim have been set on fire. So there's no security over there in the city. It's a very dangerous place. So that was what Hanoni reported to Nehemiah, and the Psukim go on to describe how Nehemiah davened to Hashem and was fasting and davening to Hashem to help him be able to do something about it. Then Omra Nehemiah Lamelech ben Nissen, then Nehemiah has a chance to say them to the king in Nissen, Shenema, as the Pasuk continues, in Perek Beis of Nehemiah. In Chodesh Nissen, in the 20th year of King Artaxast, which, as the Gemara is going to point out, Artaxasta is another name for Dariush. Yayin Mafonov, I was serving wine before him. Because that was Nehemiah's job, was the Saramashkim of King Dariush. I picked up the wine and I gave it to the king. I was never previously bad before him. Which means, in other words, like this, Maharsha explains. Usually, this wine that's being served to Dariush is Yayin Nesach. Goyim have handled it. Mind you, by the way, there's a big question, Dariush himself, if he's the son of Esther and Achashverosh, and he's the son of Esther, he's the son of a Jewish woman, how are we considering him a Goyish king over here? There is quite a bit of discussion about that, including, first of all, the Zohar mentions that Achashverosh never actually had relations with Esther. Every time that Esther needed to go to Achashverosh, she would send a shed instead in her likeness. So therefore, so in that way, she stayed Tahor. So in that way, Dariush is Bechlal, not her son. But other than that, though, there is a very interesting idea that the Maharit al-Ghazi brings in his. The Maharit al-Ghazi was a very important Achron in the times of the Mezitra Magid and the Alter Rebbe. Anyway, he wrote a very comprehensive pirush on Hilchos Bechoros. And in one place over there, he mentions a very interesting point. He says, when you have, like this, we always grow up knowing that a child of a Goyish father and a Jewish mother is Jewish, no question about it. The Maharit al-Ghazi actually has a unique shitta about it. He says it really depends how the kid is raised. If the kid is raised as a Yid, then he's a Yid. If he's raised as a Goy, then he's a Goy. So therefore, he learns that in this case, Dariush was raised in the palace as a Goy. Obviously, Esther wasn't able to do much about that. Therefore, he's considered a Goy. Now, the halacha is not like that. The accepted halacha is not like that. But that is what... Who was whose mother, Dariush? According to that, his mother was actually Esther. But he knows that she wasn't the one who was able to raise him as a yid, that he ended up being raised as a goy. Then therefore, the Maharit al-Ghazi learns he would have the halacha of a goy. So that would explain this Gemara over here. But if you don't hold like that, then you'd have to say with the Zohar that in fact he was a son of Achashverosh and Ashed, or Bepashtos, I guess Balabatish, you could say, look, Achashverosh had lots of wives. I mean, he had a whole base Hanoshim over there, so it could be Doyovish is a son of one of them. So Marashor explains like this: the wine that was being served to Doyovish is Yain Nesek. Now, when a person is serving wine to the king, he always has to taste it first, because the king always wants to know that the wine's not poison. So for that reason, by the way, a king's Saramashkim is one of his close advisors precisely for that reason. So, which is how Nehemiah is in a position now to talk to the king. But anyway, so normally Nehemiah should be usur to drink this wine. However, the Chachamim of that time, realizing that if Nehemiah has this job, he's in a unique position to be able to help the Jewish people, as in fact he did, as we see in the story over here, then the Chachamim gave him a special heter to drink that wine. For that reason, he's called in a few places in the Pesukim, he's called Hatir Shasa, which the Yerushalmi, I think, explains that the Pashtos Hatir Shasa is a title. The Ibn Ezra says it's a Persian title or something, but the Gemara explains that it's actually short for Hatir Shasa. They gave him a heter to drink this wine. So normally, Marashah explains, normally when he's serving wine to the king, he would normally drink it first, he would normally take a sip from it first. But now what happened was, ever since Nehemiah had heard about what's going on in Yerushalayim, what Hanani and company had told him, he was fasting and davening to Hashem. And Marashah learns that he had also sworn off wine. He had made a neder not to drink wine until he's able to do something about it. So now when he's serving the king his wine, he can't drink it. So for the first time. So now he's saying, Valoho, you see, Ra Lafanav, up until now, I was never bad in front of the king. I never acted in a bad way. I would always drink the wine and I'd always be besimcha in front of the king. But this time I'm not drinking it. Vayomeli Amelech, so the king says to me, Madua Panecha Royim, why does your face look bad? You look upset. Va'ata in chachoyla, you're not sick. Ein zeki im royal lev, it must be that you have a bad heart. It must be that you have in mind to do some kind of harm to me. Here you're always drinking the wine and now you refuse to. Does that mean it's poisoned or something? And of course, the real reason is he's looking bad and he's looking sad because of the news, but still, and of course, I'm very afraid, says Nehemiah, because with such an accusation, who knows what could come of it. And I said to the king, your majesty, may you live forever. Why should my face not look bad and then upset? The city where my ancestors are buried is destroyed. Nehemiah is descended from the king's Malchus Beis David. So his ancestors are literally buried there in Yerushalayim. And the gates of Yerushalayim are destroyed with fire. Marashah, by the way, points out a nuance over here. In Hanani's report, he said that the gates are nitzitzu ba'esh, which means they were singed by fire, but maybe not completely destroyed. Nehemiah, to make the king more sympathetic, exaggerated a little bit and said uklu, like they're completely destroyed, like they've been eaten up by fire. Yeah. The point is also, in a way, on the one hand, Nehemiah wants permission to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. On the other hand, he has to kind of, the Malbim, I think, explains on the Pesukim that he's kind of downplaying the importance of it. He's not saying because it's the capital of the Jewish people and it's the city of Kedusha and whatever, because then Doyovish is going to get suspicious. Maybe you want to use it as a base for rebellion. So he makes it as though it's like a personal, like a personal sentimental thing. My ancestors are buried over there. It's a pity that it shouldn't be. Anyway. So the king asks me, what exactly are you asking for? So Nehemiah says, I dab into the Eibishter, which can mean, Marashah says that it means right then and there, I gave a brief tefillah to Hashem before I start speaking to the king. Or it can mean that the words that he himself is going to say to the king means that are also on the Pashtos, on the surface, they're addressed to the king, but really they're addressed to the Eibishter. We find a similar thing with Esther when she says, Yimal Malach Toiv, etc., where she has that double meaning in mind. Yeah. Yeah, very similar. Yeah, the Ibn Ezra says on a poshut pshat level, it just means v'aspal l'lokesh mine. Previously, before I had this audience, I dive into Hashem that when I have the audience, I should know what to say. Anyway, for Omar Malach, so I said to the king, Imar Malach Toib, if it's good, if the king considers it good, Vim Yitam Abdachalafanacha, and if your servant, meaning I, am good in your eyes, if you appreciate what I do, I'm asking Asher Tishlacheni or Yehuda that you should send me to Yehuda, to the country of Yehuda, Al Ir Kivre Savoisai, to the city where my ancestors are buried, Ve'ev Nena, and I'll build it, meaning that I should be able to rebuild the walls. So he continues, the king says to me, and the Shegal was sitting next to him. We're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, what a Shegal is. On the surface, it means the queen. And in fact, there are Mephoshim who explain that it means exactly that. It means his queen, or there are even some of the Mephoshim who say that maybe it means the queen mother, which would be Esther, is sitting over there. And in that case, he's mentioning it because the Pashtos, she had some influence on her son. Anyway, so he says to me, Ad Mosay Yiyam Alachacha, how long do you plan to go for? Umosay Toshuv, and when do you expect to get back? Vayitav Lefnei Melech Vayishlacheni, the king agreed to it, and he sent me Va'etna Loizman, and I told him a time by which I'm going to be back. In the event, as we find in the Psukim, Nechemya ended up spending 12 years there in Yerushalayim, and then he was given a summons that he has to return to the king, and later on he returned to Eretz Yisrael yet again. So altogether, that king ruled. That's what I was saying before. The last date that we find for King Dariavish in the Psukim, King Nachashon Shasta, whatever, is 32 years. Nehemiah mentions that in his 20th year, I'd come to Yerushalayim, and his 32nd year, I was told I have to return to. So 12 years he was there. Nehemiah was there, and then afterwards, he describes during the time when he was away, he describes how things were starting to fall apart again. He had made tremendous efforts while he was there to strengthen Yiddishkeit, and now while he was away, things were falling apart. So then he came back over there, he found what's going on, and he made sure to get everything back straight the way it's supposed to be. No, it didn't take him 12 years to build the wall. In fact, it took him only 52 days to build the wall. But after that, they're working on it really fast, as you see in the Psukim and Nehemiah. You should read Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, by the way. It's fascinating reading, learning it even more so, of course. But, you know, we learned in Yuma, for example, that to keep the Kohen Gadol awake on Yom Kippur night, they would read to him, or he would read himself, whatever, from books of Ksuvim, and including those. They are very fascinating. But anyway, no, they built the wall very quickly because they were being harassed by the Kusim and other people, so they had to do it as fast as possible. But no, after that, Nehemiah stayed over there because there was a lot that had to be accomplished over there. There were problems. There were social problems between the rich and the poor. There were problems over there that there were people that there was a whole problem with intermarriage, which Ezra was trying to deal with, and Nehemiah had to again deal with it. So there was a lot for him to work on over there. So in the end, he had stayed there for 12 years, and then he was told he has to come back, and then, yeah, that's it. Okay, so the point is, the Gemara has established that Kislev of Artaxerxes' 20th year is before Nisan of his 20th year, and therefore that means necessarily that the years of a Goyish king, like Dariavash, are counted from Tishrei rather than from Nisan. So then the Gemara is going to go on, and we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about more details within that. Okay, let's see. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Let's see, what is today? Hey, Adar Aleph. The Melech HaMashiach, we know, has the status of a Melech and a Nasi. You have the Pasuk, Va'avdi David Melech Aleihem, that David will be the king over the Jewish people, and that David Avdi will be Nasi Lehem Ba'olam. Meaning that, as it explains, the Pasuk is talking about the two roles of Melech HaMashiach. Mashiach is going to be a king in the sense that he leads the Jewish people in war, Yucham Lochamas Hashem B'Yinatzeach, and he's a Nasi in the sense, the Nasi is the one who teaches the people and guides them in the ways of Hashem. So that explains why the Pasuk says by Melech it says Aleihem, and by Nasi it says Lahem. By the Melech it says Aleihem, because how does a king have, a king has to be higher than the people. He has to be Aleihem, he has to be higher than them. As opposed to the Nasi's Hashpa is in a way of Kiruv, that he makes sure that the people will be able to absorb and understand what he's saying. Therefore, it's described as Lahem, it's for them, meaning closer to their level. Continuing with Halachas of Maftir. The point of saying the Haftorah, the takana of saying the Haftorah and saying the brachas before and after it is only if you had a complete Kriyas HaTorah with all the appropriate number of aliyas and the appropriate number of brachas. But if it happens and on a regular Shabbos, when there's not a special maftir, if on a regular Shabbos there's a mistake in the Sefer Torah, there's a psul in the Sefer Torah, and they don't have another Sefer Torah, and therefore, in that case, then in that case, you have certain cases where the Ola is not going to make the last bracha, and similarly, also when you have so that's on a regular Shabbos when you have the Haftorah is only the Maftar anyway is only repeating Psukim from the parasha, so you can have, for example, if they found a mistake in Shvi, because after all he lays till the end of the parasha, and then there can be cases where because of that mistake he doesn't make the after bracha because it's a serious enough mistake. Then you also have, for example, you can have on a Yom Tov or Shabbos Chalamor or Shabbos Chalamor or Shabbos Rosh Chodesh or whatever, where you have the Maftir is a separate thing for Choy Vasayom, then you can have a case where you find a mistake in the Maftir's portion. Either way then, so then you don't make the brachas on the Haftorah because, again, the Haftorah is only to be said with its brachas only if you had all the appropriate brachas on the Torah. So in that case, you would say the Haftorah without brachas. But if, let's say, on a regular Shabbos, after they finished the last Aliyah, and the seventh Aliyah, that is, and after the seventh Ola made his brachas, then they found a psul in the Sefer Torah, then that's fine. He says, Nira, it seems that then you can say that Torah with the brachas, because at that point there have been the appropriate number of brachas on the Torah from the seven Ola.